Office managers be warned, the greatest threat to productivity isn't Facebook, texting, or web surfing. Judging from a new hit play, your biggest potential risk is that one of your employees will bring in a copy of The Great Gatsby. Elevator Repair Services' production of Gats, currently playing at the Public Theater, begins with a frustrated worker cracking the book open and beginning to read it out loud. In minutes, the entire office is subsumed in its plot. It's an amazing theatrical transformation pulled off largely through the performance of Scott Shepard, who plays Nick, and the vision of director John Collins, and they join us now to discuss this remarkable production. Hello.
Hello.
It's difficult to describe the premise of your play and do it justice. It begins in an office, and it's obviously set in the early 90s, not that long ago, and yet the office feels so outdated. Is that a reason you chose that time?
Well, I think of it as an office kind of stuck in a time warp of some kind, where maybe it's right now, but all the equipment's old, and or maybe it's 15 or 20 years ago.
But you wouldn't have set it in the 20s when Gatsby takes place.
No, that's true. That was a very deliberate decision to not make it a period piece that way, to set up that contrast.
Scott, I'm sure you've thought about your office character, who he is, and why he picks up that particular book. You have to make us believe that somebody's suddenly going to read a book out loud in an office and everybody's going to go along with it. Yeah. Was that something that you had to work out for yourself?
Well, it was the kind of thing that we wanted to that conceit became something we didn't want to get too specific about. We kind of kept it mysterious. So this guy starts reading the book out loud in his office, and then other people tend to sort of start to get involved in a way that we never quite fully explain.
Well, to some degree, it's like our experience when we're reading a book. I know sometimes a character will come along, and I will assign it that a person I know to that character.
Yeah.
Because that works for me rather than some abstraction. And that's what seems to be happening here.
Yeah, the whole show is sort of a long, an extended act of projection. Yeah. And I remember reading in a book about an exercise that was supposed to open up your creativity, where you were supposed to look at something and call it by the wrong name. And that after you just did that and walked around the room doing that for a few minutes, you start to sort of see things more vividly and the edges of things become more clear. And it occurred to me last week while we were doing the show that that's kind of what we're constantly doing with Gats, is projecting these ideas from the book onto these ratty office furniture and found objects.
And people who don't necessarily look like the characters. For example, the man who plays Jay Gatsby does not have a full head of hair. He's a lot older than the character, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
How long have you been playing the part, Scott?
Well, we've been working on this kind of since 1999, but
it just
really
occurred
since
to
2005.
Wow.
He's a little 2000, slow.
2005. Wow. Well, you've done other books, your company.
Since then, yeah.
The Sound and the Fury, The Sun Also Rises. Mm-hmm. Always the complete text?
No. And in fact, part of the reason for choosing to do those other two after we had finished most of our work on The Great Gatsby was in a way to prove to ourselves that there were other ways to go about it. You know, we chose to do another novel after we did The Great Gatsby because we knew it would be a brand new challenge, because we knew that, you know, doing the whole novel verbatim was something that was something about The Great Gatsby made that work.
Well, first of all, it's a rather small novel, brief novel, and I think that many people feel it's the great American novel. If any novel could be called that, it's this book. It's close to perfect.
We thought so. Yeah, that was part of that was a discovery that we made in a kind of active way when we first sat down to work on it. We didn't really decide in the very beginning that we were going to read every word of it,
including the he said and she said.
Yeah, we really thought, well, this is some beginning of a new show of ours, and something will come out of it, and The Great Gatsby is going to inspire our next show. But as we started to sit down with it and try to stage scenes, it really didn't feel like we could lose any of the language. Even the he saids and she saids were part of the poetry of it.
So. It's kind of like we came at the Great Gatsby like strip miners and then suddenly realized the landscape was too beautiful to do that to it.
Yeah.
Well, when my producer told her son that we were going to do a segment on a play based on the Great Gatsby that's 6.5 hours long, his comment was, you could read it in that time.
Well, that's true. That's provably true.
Well, that was one of the first things we did was to sit down and read it out loud after we had this crazy idea that we should do the whole text. The first thing, one of the first things was to sit in a circle and say, well, just how long does that take? Mm-hmm. And that was encouraging, actually. Yeah, you can read it in about 5.5 hours, not 12 or 18 or 24. And that we thought, well, there might be the possibility of getting an audience to come along for that ride.
Well, were you worried at all about its theatricality? Because this is a book that moves all over the place.
Sure.
And you weren't going to have a lot of different sets.
Right. We were. I mean, I can remember being, terrified at times that, you know, we had set ourselves on this crazy, impossible mission that, was just going to, that might fail just because it was too long or because something about that wouldn't work as theater. But from really early on, we developed a kind of faith in the language and the potential that the language itself had and the sound of it had. And that really carried us. And our earliest experiments with it got such a positive response. And I think that the theatrical idea that works for it is not, you know, multiple settings or period details. It's the contrast that we've set up, and I think that's the theater of it is the contrast.
Well, the magic of the words was lost in the film adaptations, but and that's why I guess they lost some of the magic. But in this case, we have a lot of wonderful visuals because we're hearing F. Scott Fitzgerald's language, like the light at the end of the dock and the spectacles of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg, things that probably you couldn't put into a movie.
Right. Well, and I don't want to suggest that there isn't a strong visual element to our show. I think that what's required of the design in a piece like this is specific and subtle. The office environment has to be very rich with its own kind of visual details because characters are constantly picking up strange little objects that are transforming into those objects from the book. And the light and the sound have to achieve a kind of – they have to tell a kind of ghost story almost. And that's not an easy thing to do, and I think we're very lucky. We've got some amazing designers working on this to make that happen.
Scott, you seem so effortless in the role. How many times have you read the whole book out loud?
Well, we just did our 100th show last week, our 100th full performance of Gats. I don't know what you need to multiply that to account for all the rehearsals, but maybe about a factor of 6.
Well, you've been reading it. You look like you're really reading it, and I wonder how much you've memorized by now.
Well, that's the trick. I mean, it's the performance. Now, it calls for me to be unfamiliar with something that I'm so thoroughly familiar with at this point. I mean, it's all in my head now. It goes in very easily because it's so pleasurable, the combinations of words. And sometimes we like to play a game called Stump the Freak, where somebody picks up the book and reads 3 words from anywhere in it, and then I have to continue where they leave off.
And you do know?
I rarely am stumped.
He can do it. And if he's stumped sometimes, or if he gets it wrong, it's because the person doesn't realize they're reading a word that exists, that occurs 4 or 5 times in the book, and he's just choosing one of the other ones.
My guests are the director of Gats, currently at the Public Theater, and Scott Shepherd, who plays Nick Carraway, the narrator of the novel, one of its major characters. Did you worry about casting Gatsby himself?
Well, actually, in the workshops, early workshops and experiments, we had a couple of other actors come through the role, and the three actors who've helped develop it have all been very different. Although I think there's something very special about Jim Fletcher, who plays Gatsby now. It is true that people not unreasonably imagine Gatsby as a very debonair, dashing young guy. He's described as being just a little over 30.
With a lot of hair. And Mr. Fletcher does not have a lot of hair.
That's true. We do make a few hair jokes at Jim's expense, but he's a good sport. What Jim brings to it, I think, that is often lost in other portrayals of that character is a little bit of a scary edge. Jim brings great sincerity to this role, and you really believe how tragically in love with Daisy he is. But you can also see that he's somebody not from money. You can see that he's somebody who could also pass for a criminal. And ultimately, that's what you learn about Gatsby, is that, it's all a pose, and that
that's
behind
why there's so
it,
many rumors about him.
Yeah. I mean, I think people often make the mistake of casting the role as the myth of Gatsby that's perpetrated in the book, but not the character of Gatsby in the book.
But according to the playbill, should I assume that Jim Fletcher, who plays Henry Gatz, is not a professional actor?
Actually, Jim, his character is listed as Jim. Henry Gatz is his father.
Gatz comes out of why is it called Gatz and not Gatz?
Well, that's Jay Gatsby's real name. Mm-hmm. And so the character Henry C. Gatz is his father, who shows up at the end. His name is how does the passage go?
James Gatz, that was really, or at least legally, his name.
Yeah,
he had changed at the age of 17, and at the specific moment that witnessed the beginning of his career.
So Gatz is, I wanted a name for this piece that wasn't just The Great Gatsby, because I didn't want to be projecting the idea with the title that we were just giving you our interpretation of this story. This was a story that contained within it the story of The Great Gatsby. And I also liked the way the name Gatz refers to the kind of hidden identity of Jay Gatsby. And that had a nice resonance with what we were doing.
You've been performing this all over the world, haven't you?
Yeah, we have.
How have non-English speaking audiences reacted? Do they get it?
Yeah, they get it.
Because language is so important.
One of our first performances, the first time we really showed this was in Brussels, and we were all worried that it was going to be a lot to ask of a non-English speaking audience to sit through 7 hours of an American novel. And we're pleasantly surprised that it seemed to work.
I mean, the reaction does vary, and I think it varies depending on how well acquainted with the English language the audience is. But we've been really surprised, pleasantly surprised. And the next place we did it after Brussels was Amsterdam, and they seem to understand every word.
Well, the Dutch speak English almost better than many Americans. Some people running for office could probably study English in the Netherlands. How does your company Elevator Repair Service work?
well, we operate as an ensemble. We don't have a sort of strict roster. The membership of the company is fluid, I guess. But we make every show we make starting with a group of people, and I think that's how we define ourselves as an ensemble. There may be new people. There were new people who came on for this production, but rather than starting with roles and going out and finding actors to play them, we start with a group of actors and then find roles for them to play. So even if it's...
But not always books.
Not always books, no. That's definitely been a focus of ours lately. But our work before this, it's original. It's based on found material sometimes. In a way, The Great Gatsby is just a great found text for us.
Well, you were quoted as saying that by using the book, you blow away theater and the awkwardness of live performance.
I remember saying that?
I do. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, there's – I think our work has often worked with a certain contrast and juxtapositioning and contradiction. So we like to have – we like to do something unexpected or even something that seems impossible or wrong on stage and play with the kind of theater that that generates.
Has it changed over the course of the performances,
would you say?
Yeah, it changes. I mean, we're constantly – John's there at every performance, so if he thinks of something new, then we might add something.
I do feel badly for my listeners. Tickets aren't available. Is there any possibility the play will be extended?
Well, we've already extended it twice, and we're not going to be able to extend it any further this time around. I think we all have hope that it can still have another life, although who knows what that will be. And there are still, you know, I think some people who show up can grab a cancellation, or there are still those few tickets that are out there some way, somehow. So there's reason to have some hope.
Well, there are lots of theaters in New York. You could always come back and do it at another theater, couldn't you?
I suppose, yeah.
We're talking about it.
Uh-huh. Well, do you think you'll ever get bored doing this?
Yes.
But not yet.
Not yet.
Thank you both so much for being with us. I've been talking with Scott Shepherd, who plays Nick Carraway in Gats, currently at the Public Theater, and with John Collins, the director of this production. It's been a real pleasure having you here.
Thank you.